Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hello and welcome to Pro-Life Primetime News. Today is Friday, March 22nd. I'm Leslie Palmer.
And I'm Teresa Watson. Thanks for joining us this evening. Our top story tonight comes with a warning. U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene convened a hearing on Capitol Hill to expose the truth about late-term abortion and the illegal harvest and sale of the organs of aborted babies. It's hard to see and hear exactly how these precious innocents are treated by the criminal abortion industry.
Our second story also carries a warning. With the U.S. Supreme Court set to hear oral arguments next week in a case that could impact chemical abortion in this country, we will present the stories of three women, one pro-life and two pro-choice, who were not prepared for what really happens during an at-home abortion.
There were few surprises in Tuesday's primaries, with President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump cruising to easy victories. I'll have more in political news in a nutshell.
A state senator in Arizona who was all over the news this week for saying she's planning to abort her non-viable child tops this week's abortion in the news.
Singer-songwriter Jonathan Baldwin will join us to talk about his powerful and timely new video called Plead Their Case, which we'll show you. Please stay with us.
The callousness and criminality of the abortion industry were on display Tuesday at a congressional hearing attended by almost no one, but more than 30,000 people, presumably pro-lifers, watched the live stream. Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene convened the hearing with Illinois Representative Mary Miller, later joined by Texas Representative Chip Roy. They invited undercover journalist David DeLeiden and progressive activist Teresa Bukovanak to testify about what they have found in their efforts to expose crime within the abortion industry.
In what had to be a first for Congress, Bukovanak showed clips of very late-term babies killed by abortion, and even one baby she believes was born alive after an abortion and then left to die, which is a federal crime. One of the babies is a girl whose body is intact, but who bears the hallmark wounds of an illegal partial birth abortion, Bukovanak said. Also on the video, we hear, he's whole, as activist Lauren Handy lifts the perfectly formed body of a second victim, estimated to be at 33 weeks gestation when he was killed.
The babies were among five abortion victims whose bodies were recovered outside a Washington, D.C. abortion business. Handy already has been convicted in taking part in a rescue effort at the same abortion facility and still faces separate charges after the bodies of the five late-term victims were found in her apartment. With respect to the babies, their mothers, and those who have chosen abortion, we decided not to show these clips. But in a congressional hearing room where she did watch them, Greene said, "There aren't words to describe that video. That is appalling and very difficult to watch."
DeLeiden showed some of the footage he originally released in 2015 to expose how the abortion industry illegally harvests and sells the organs of aborted babies to rack up enormous profits. Here's a conversation he secretly recorded with the medical director of a Planned Parenthood network in Texas. Again, I warn you, this is hard to hear.
You know, I would much rather do three or four passes than 15.
Right. Is that your average, like three to four passes to remove everything? Or? Yeah. Sean's listening in, she's like, you take notes, son. You can talk to them. Yeah. Oh, you probably do, actually. Yeah.
It depends. I mean, there are some that are like, I need you to make one more pass. Like, avoid PBA. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm to avoid federal law.
Too close.
I was like. Oh, she's sitting there, like, coaching her, like, watching how to.
No. But, I mean, we know, right? Like, if I'm doing a procedure and I'm.
And it's
brief. That I'm in fear of that it's about to come to the umbilicus.
Uh-huh.
I might ask for a second set of corsets.
Uh-huh.
Hold the body at the cervix and pull off the leg.
Oh, so you get a okay.
So it's not
right.
Yeah.
So that's where if you've got it coming out to umbilicus and that torso area is also intact, that's when I start to get excited, because that's like, because that's all the organs in there that were right there.
I find that even if I can't get it out intact, I can still get you a good
right
sample.
Now, if you just do a disarticulation, though, you know, while sitting, so you just, you'll pop a leg off
right.
or whatever, then you're free, right? Like, it
right.
counts, and so then you can just bring the rest of it through,
right.
all
right.
in,
them,
all
like,
in, however, all in one piece, because you've
right.
already done a disarticulation.
Correct.
Yeah.
And usually at that point, yeah.
And you probably do the whole intent statement thing and all of that with the feelings. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm a little shocked. Did I just hear her say that if she can get a leg, or if she can dismember the baby in any way possible, then she's past the federal ban? Is that what she was saying? The federal law? So if she can pop off a leg, then it's no longer illegal. Is that what she was saying?
Yeah, so there's several different things going on in that clip. That is a conversation that I remember very well that I had with the chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast, which is one of the biggest Planned Parenthood. It's among the top. It used to be among the top Planned Parenthood abortion centers in the country. Now, abortion is illegal, is a felony in Texas. So that clinic has been, as far as being an abortion clinic, has been shut down. But that's a conversation with the chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast, as well as their vice president of abortion access, together with the two of them. This was a conversation that I had with them undercover, discussing how we might be able to set up a contract for Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast selling aborted fetuses and aborted fetal body parts to our test undercover company, to then turn around and resell to taxpayer-funded researchers. And in that clip, what the chief medical officer is describing is how they think that they can try and skirt the federal law against partial birth abortion, where if the baby is coming out of the mother, is being pulled out of the mother with the forceps past the baby's umbilical cord, which is one of the anatomical landmarks, which is written into the federal partial birth abortion law, that if they're afraid that it's getting too close to an obvious partial birth abortion situation, that the doctor will take one set of forceps, hold the body of the 4 or 5 or 6 month old baby at the woman's cervix, and then use a second set of forceps to pull off a leg or two from the fetus, and then allow the rest of the baby to be delivered. Now, you heard me say in the clip undercover, you know, that's when I start to get excited, because as a fetal organ harvester, that means that the baby's torso is still going to be intact, which means that you're going to have access to all of the body parts within the torso, the heart, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys. But obviously the baby, you know, just pulling off, you know, one leg from a baby who's 5 months old is not going to immediately kill the baby. That baby will still be alive being delivered. It's just a live baby being delivered, missing one leg. So what the chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast is describing in that clip is mutilating a 4 or 5 or 6 month old baby while it's being delivered in order to try to cover up their violation of the federal partial birth abortion law in order to sell more aborted baby body parts. And
Representative Green asked Elidan if any of the people who so blatantly admitted breaking the law have been imprisoned. In fact, no one has been prosecuted except Elidan and his colleague, Sandra Merritt. In his introductory remarks, Elidan offers an explanation for why that might be the case.
The abortion industry, led by Planned Parenthood, is a powerful special interest in our country. They fight to silence reporting on their black market of aborted baby organ harvesting, and the ongoing cover-up goes to the highest levels of our government. Kamala Harris, as the Planned Parenthood-endorsed Attorney General of California in 2016, raided my apartment to seize hundreds of hours of unreleased undercover footage. Some of the biggest Planned Parenthood abortion centers got a federal judge in San Francisco, who previously opened and funded a Planned Parenthood clinic, to issue a federal injunction against the release of the remaining footage. I and my organization now face a total $25 million fine for our investigative reporting.
After tonight's show, we'll post a link to a video of the entire hearing on X, formerly Twitter. Please go to @ProLifeNewsShow and consider watching.
The Guttmacher Institute this week reported two disturbing statistics: that abortion in 2023 topped 1 million for the first time since 2012, and that 63% of abortions in the U.S. are now chemical abortions, an increase of 10% since 2020. If these numbers are true, they are likely related. In the last several years, the upper gestational limit for chemical abortion was increased from 7 to 10 weeks. And where women once had to see a doctor in person and take the first pill while they're at the abortion center, that is no longer necessary. Mothers can have a video appointment with an abortionist and receive the pills by mail. The abortion-loving media extols the virtues of this type of abortion, calling it self-managed care and repeating the blatant lie that a chemical abortion is safe and easy. Some states require colleges to provide chemical abortion pills to their students, and national pharmacy chains CVS and Walgreens will begin to distribute the deadly drugs.
On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in a case called FDA versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine that centers on both of these aspects of chemical abortion, extending the limit to 10 weeks and allowing the pills to be sent through the mail. This is the most consequential case the High Court has heard since a 2022 case out of Mississippi that led to Roe v. Wade being overturned. If the court rules in favor of the pro-life organizations and physicians who make up the Hippocratic Alliance, the upper limit for chemical abortion could be dialed back to 7 weeks, and mothers could have to see an abortionist in person. Both of those are common sense requirements and would, we hope, help bring down the tragically high number of babies dying and moms being hurt by chemical abortion.
Tonight, we would like to highlight the true nature of chemical abortion through the experiences of three women. It's not an easy fix, it's not quick, and it certainly is not without consequences. In this first clip, we will hear from Abby Johnson, a one-time Planned Parenthood director who eventually left the industry and became one of the most passionate pro-life leaders in the country. She visited Priests for Life headquarters last month and talked about her chemical abortion, which also was depicted in the movie Unplanned that was based on the book of the same name. Please be advised, her descriptions of the abortion are graphic and can be disturbing.
I thought I was dying. I was working at the clinic at the time. You know, I had told people, this is natural. It's like having a period. And so that's what I was told when I took the pills home. I took my first pill in the clinic, Mifeprex. I would like to say that I had some kind of hesitation when I took it, but I didn't. I took it, felt nothing, and I thought, okay, yeah, gonna be fine. Went home the next day, 24 hours later, I did what I told other women and what they told me to do. Inserted the pills, and what I thought was going to happen, what I told them was going to happen, is that a few hours later, I would begin to cramp and have some bleed. Immediately, I mean within minutes of inserting the pills, I began to hemorrhage and have cramping and pain like I've never had before in my life. I could barely walk to the bathroom. I was in so much pain. There was blood everywhere. And I was sitting on the toilet. I finally made it to the toilet. And I was sweating. I was just sweating profusely. And I remember thinking, they're not sweating because they're hot. They're sweating because of pain. They're sweating because of the pain. And in that moment, I remember thinking, this must be what labor feels like. Like I'm having labor pain. Like I'm delivering this baby. And it was just like all of this reality started like sinking in. Things that I had not been aware of, things I had not thought of, things that I had never told anybody else that I'd given these pills to, right? And I was just hurting so bad. I thought I'm gonna get in the shower. And maybe some warm water running over me would feel good. And I could barely stand. I was leaning on the shower, and this warm water was running over me. And I felt just this debilitating, like make you double over kind of sharp pain. And then I felt this clot come out of me. And I didn't see it immediately, but I heard it hit the shower floor. And I knew that's my baby. And I didn't know what to do. I knew that it was too big to go down the drain. And so I knew I was gonna have to deal with it. And I finally, my eyes were closed. I finally just opened my eyes and I reached down and I remember my hand was just shaking and I was holding my baby and I was not prepared for that moment. And I didn't know what to do. And so I just dumped my baby in the toilet and it took me a long time to finally convince myself to flush the toilet. And I remember I was still bleeding so heavily. I was still really hemorrhaging. And I finally thought, okay, I'm gonna get in the bathtub. So I drew a bath and I was in the bathtub and I guess I kind of just like passed out or dozed off or something. I don't know how long I was out, but I remember waking up and the bathtub was just full of blood. And I remember thinking, and there was blood everywhere. I mean, it was all over the floor. It was on the side of the tub, toilet, everywhere. And I remember thinking, it looks like I'm in the middle of a crime scene. And then I thought, I am. This is a crime scene.
I thought I was dying, Abby said. She was not in any way prepared for the blood or the pain. That's a very common theme among women, both pro-life and pro-abortion, who talk about their chemical abortion experiences. In these next two clips, young social media influencers tell their followers about their chemical abortions, how they were not prepared for what actually happened, and how they felt about it. First, we'll hear from Sadie Bass, a young woman in Great Britain with 38,000 YouTube followers.
I can't go through this ever again. Like, I cannot have an abortion again because it was too hard, both emotionally and both physically. Because a little part of me wishes someone would have told me how bad it would be, because the people that spoke to me about it, I don't know if they were just saving my feelings and trying to make it seem better than it was, or if actually it wasn't that bad for them. But I'm not gonna lie, it was the worst pain. Like, that, I think that is the worst thing I've ever gone through in that sense. Like, I would happily dislocate my knee again and again and again, and but I'm not doing abortion. Like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it ever again. So it was probably, the most painful experience I've had in my life and the most unpleasant thing I've ever had to deal with in my life. It just feels like nothing will relieve it. And I didn't know what to do. This has been going on for 4 hours now, 4 hours. And you do keep going to the toilet and there is a lot of blood, a lot, like, you have to keep changing your pads. I would recommend getting literally like, not nappies, but like incontinence pads. They're like really, really thick. You will need them, and it does say on the pamphlet to get them. So you're going through that. And then I was like, I didn't know what to do. And I was like, I just wanna be like in a bath. Like, this, all I could think was like, I wanna be in water. Like, makes me feel good, it's gonna feel better. And you know what, that was the only thing that helped me. So maybe if you need advice, run a hot bath. And I just lied in there for so long and it really did soothe me. And to be honest, after I had the bath, I felt a lot better. And then you kind of have like a lot of why am I even doing this video? And then you have a lot of stuff like drop out, like, which I assume is like the baby. I don't know. It's really traumatic and horrible, and it's just awful. It's horrific.
There's a lot more to her video, and I hope you'll watch it, but she does curse quite a bit, so please be advised. In our next clip, a woman named Liberty Heartless describes her chemical abortion to her 22,000 followers. It clearly was not an easy fix for a woman who already had one child and has since had another.
The next couple days, I bled a lot. Like, I bled a little bit on my jeans and I had to wash them, and then they were fresh out of the dryer and I put them back on, and I was wearing like a pad, you guys, like a big pad. And then I put them on and it happened again. It literally went around the pad, like how much I was bleeding. It was like a big gush of blood. It was crazy. So I took a bath and like I was just bleeding so much. I bled for like a couple of months. It was crazy. I had to take off so much time off of work, and eventually I had to quit because I was gonna get fired if I didn't. It was hard on my body. I couldn't work for so long because I kept bleeding at work, like way too much, more than a pad could hold. You're not supposed to wear tampons.
Women's health and safety has never been the concern of the abortion industry, nor is it important to the current administration in Washington, which wants to remove all barriers to the procedure and to have taxpayers foot the bill for the destruction of the unborn. Our vice president is even being hailed as a hero for visiting a Planned Parenthood killing center in Minnesota last week. But it's our hope here at Priests for Life and throughout the pro-life movement that the U.S. Supreme Court will take this small step of restoring some safety measures in the chemical abortion procedure. The decision is likely to be announced at the end of June.
Former President Trump cruised to easy wins in five Republican presidential primaries Tuesday, and pro-life Bernie Moreno, Trump's candidate of choice in Ohio's crucial Senate race, won. Most of the non-Trump votes in Ohio, Arizona, Florida, Kansas, and Illinois went to former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, who suspended her campaign 2 weeks ago. Biden easily won the Democratic primaries in Ohio, Illinois, Kansas, and Arizona. Florida did not hold a Democratic primary. Trump says he will make a decision pretty soon on where he stands on abortion. In an interview with Fox News aired Sunday, the ex-president said he would like to make both sides happy as he seeks a second term in the White House. Abortion is expected to be one of the top issues heading into the November election and has proven to be a huge motivator for Democrats and moderate voters. Trump has privately expressed support for a 16-week national abortion ban with exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother, the New York Times reported in February. I would like to see if we could make both sides happy, Trump told Fox News in an interview on Sunday. On the campaign trail, Trump has celebrated the overturning of Roe and touts nominating the three justices to the Supreme Court during his first term that helped overturn the landmark ruling in 2022. They did something that, from a lot of standpoints, is extremely good, Trump told Fox News. He blasted Democrats as the ones who are radicals on the issue. President Biden's reelection campaign has already aired a series of ads on abortion ahead of the November election. The president has vowed to sign the Radical Women's Health Protection Act if Congress sends him a bill. But the act is so extreme, calling for taxpayer-funded abortion through all 9 months and repealing every state-level protection for the unborn, does not have enough support on the Hill. Former Republican presidential candidate Asa Hutchinson revealed Monday that he will not back Donald Trump in the 2024 presidential election. I have not endorsed Donald Trump for president, and I will not do so, the former Arkansas governor wrote in a U.S. Today op-ed. This is a costly and difficult position to take, Hutchinson added, noting his long career in Republican politics. President Biden won't be getting Hutchinson's support either. Former Vice President Mike Pence similarly announced last week that he won't endorse Trump in 2024 and won't vote for Biden. Trump has ruled out Vivek Ramaswamy as his running mate and is instead eyeing the entrepreneur for a cabinet job, according to people familiar with the matter, as the Republican presidential nominee sizes up possible administration. Trump personally told Ramaswamy he won't be vice president pick, according to people briefed on the discussion, but is considering him for posts, including Homeland Security Secretary. The lack of excitement many Americans feel about a presidential rematch has heightened interest in alternatives to the major party candidates, none more so than Robert F. Kennedy Jr., whose famous name has helped him build buzz for his independent bid. Kennedy is a huge long shot to win electoral college votes, much less the presidency. But his campaign events have drawn large crowds of supporters and people interested in his message. He plans to announce his vice presidential nominee later this month in Oakland, California, and is stoking expectations that he might pick New York Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers or former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. Kennedy has been approved for the ballot in Utah. His campaign and super PAC says he collected enough signatures to qualify in several other states, including the battlegrounds of Arizona, Georgia, and Nevada, though election officials in those states have not yet affirmed his candidacy. And that's political news in a nutshell.
An Arizona state senator revealed on the floor of the chamber this week that she is making plans to abort her non-viable child. Senator Eva Birch was told by her physician that she would not be able to deliver a healthy baby, and she made plans for an abortion. At 8 weeks pregnant, she is well within the Arizona cutoff of 15 weeks, but she didn't like having to undergo an ultrasound, hear information on abortion alternatives, and wait 24 hours after that for the abortion, which apparently she still has not had. I don't think people should have to justify their abortions, she said in a floor speech Monday. While she described the pregnancy as non-viable and likely to result in miscarriage, she did not specify the health problems of her unborn child, and none of the dozens of media outlets that reported the story apparently thought to ask. Birch aborted a child in 2022 after being told that baby, too, was non-viable. In a related matter, the Family Research Council revealed the results of a study that looked at perinatal hospice and mothers' feelings after deciding to choose life for their non-viable babies. According to Fox News, the study surveyed 82 women in 11 hospice programs to determine who was choosing perinatal hospice, what type of care they were receiving, and how they felt about their experience in these programs. Services offered to the moms included counseling, sonograms, mementos, prayer, support groups, a birth plan, burial for their child, and a memorial service. A large majority of the women found the programs helpful for the grieving process. Most of the respondents were married, white, and religious, with above-average incomes and bachelor's degrees. Before choosing perinatal hospice, more than half of the moms had been counseled by their physicians to abort their babies. Increasing the awareness of perinatal hospice among policymakers, healthcare professionals, and the general public is an important and worthwhile goal for the pro-life movement, said Dr. Michael New, an associate professor at Catholic University of America who co-authored the report. Unable to convince his pregnant girlfriend to drink a coffee he had poisoned with abortion pills, a married father of five allegedly inserted the pills inside the woman during sex. David Coots, a resident of Washington State who works as a nurse practitioner, now faces several charges, including rape and assault. And his wife, Melissa, who allegedly tried to dissuade her husband's lover from reporting the attempted murder, has been charged with tampering with a witness. Taxpayers in Nevada will start paying for abortions after a judge struck down the state's limits on Medicaid coverage. Clark County District Judge Erica Ballou said Tuesday from the bench that she planned to issue a written order at a later date directing the State Department of Health and Human Services to grant Medicaid coverage for all abortions. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem signed two pro-life laws this week. One calls for the state to produce a video and other materials to explain the abortion law that protects most babies from abortion, and the other allows people to withdraw their signatures from ballot question petitions, such as one currently circulating that would reinstate abortion in the state. A ballot amendment that would invent a right to abortion in the Montana Constitution is a step closer to making its way before voters in November. The state Supreme Court on Tuesday overruled the state attorney general's finding that the referendum authored by Planned Parenthood was legally insufficient. The amendment still faces many hurdles. Supporters must finalize ballot statement language with the Attorney General's office, pass that language through a legislative committee, and collect and submit more than 60,000 verified signatures before June 21st. And finally, pro-lifers from South Carolina who were made to remove hats bearing pro-life messages during a visit to the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., have agreed to accept $50,000 to settle their lawsuit against the facility. Air and Space is the largest of the Smithsonian Institution's museums. Security personnel at all of the Smithsonian's facilities now will be instructed that it is okay for visitors to wear clothing bearing messages, including religious and pro-life statements. And that's abortion in the news. The Moral Outcry National Petition Movement to make abortion illegal in all states has collaborated with Luminate Pictures' new music video, Plead Their Case, on YouTube and other music apps. The video illustrates a woman considering whether or not to take the chemical abortion drug protocol, mifepristone, followed by misoprostol, while a U.S. Supreme Court justice labors over his decision on the abortion drug.
We have with us tonight Luminate Pictures videographer, singer-songwriter Jonathan Baldwin, who will tell us more about this special song. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be with you guys.
So Jonathan, tell us about your collaboration with the Moral Outcry Movement and what led to Plead Their Case being recorded.
Well, it all started way back in, it was about 5 years ago when we brought a petition to the Supreme Court to end abortion. It was signed by over 650,000 people, including you guys. We so appreciate Priest for Life and the collaboration we did together to get these signatures before the Supreme Court. But we brought a scroll that I actually designed that was 5 feet wide by 125 feet long. And we brought it in front of the Supreme Court. And we said, please overturn Roe versus Wade. And they actually listened to us and they heard our cries. They heard the cries of these little ones first and foremost, but then also 680,000 people that want abortion to be illegal in our nation. And so from there, we were actually working on a song to go along with that petition. Called Plead Their Case from Psalm 82. And I worked with some musicians at the ministry I'm a part of in Kansas City. And And we worked together to write a song that would just encapsulate that cry from God's heart to the government officials, to the Supreme Court justices, to our politicians, saying, please remember the cries of the unborn, plead their case on behalf of the oppressed, the poor, but then especially the unborn.
Wow. So, Jonathan, what led you to becoming so passionate about saving the unborn?
Well, it started for me in 2004 with a piece of red tape over my mouth that said life on it. I went with a group of young people who started a whole movement called Bound for Life that's gone all over the nation fighting abortion. And I was standing out in front of that court and I heard a song in my heart for the ending of abortion called Voiceless. And that started me writing several songs. And it's just been an exciting journey, just getting to partner with God's heart, who he's the one that really wants abortion to end. And he's the one we're actually following in this movement. He's the God of justice that we know one day is going to return and make all wrong things right. But we're partnering with his heart. He's the one that has touched my heart for these little ones.
Well, thank you. Thank you for using your talents for that. And would you now do us the honor of introducing this moving and impactful music video?
Absolutely. We shot this video in the old Supreme Court room in the Kansas State Capitol. God moved heaven and earth to make that happen. Some amazing legislatures partnered with us to pass our ability to be able to do that in the courtroom. It's about this justice that's laboring over his decision, an African-American justice saying, oh, man, do I want to rule in favor of life or not? There's so many complications. And he's hearing the arguments from both sides, from a pro-choice lawyer and then also from a pro-life lawyer, Alan Parker, who's playing himself, arguing before the court. And he's hearing these arguments and wrestling with them. And then at the same time, we're seeing our main character who's wrestling over, am I going to take an abortion pill or not? And so I just hope you'll be blessed by this and in the same way I have been as I've been editing it and producing it.
God takes his stand before the rulers of the nations. He judges in the middle of their halls, saying, how long will you rule unjustly, ruling in favor of the wicked?
Oh God. be a decree that reverses the orders of this court today.
Father, I pray for every pregnant mom that you would just minister to them, that they would choose life.
We are asking you, God, to hear the prayers of the tiny ones.
Lord, we want to stand with you. We want to be those that trust you.
Abba, align our hearts with your heart for the babies. Father, move our hearts to fully and joyfully believe that children are a gift from you.
Save the little ones as you saved me from being aborted.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining us this evening and sharing the background to plead their case. So if our viewers would like to see the video again and share it, how would they find it?
Yes, you can get it at luminatepictures.com. That'd probably be the easiest way, but it is available on YouTube, and that's the place where we're really wanting to drive traffic. I encourage you, when you watch it, as soon as you're done watching it, hit that like button and then also comment on it, and that will help the YouTube algorithm decide to put it in front of more people. And we're just hoping to just get this in front of as many eyes as we can. And we're praying that it'll actually be a part of influencing the Supreme Court on this current case of whether or not the abortion pill will be illegal in our nation or not in the coming days. So please just plead with us for these unborn babies by sharing this and getting the word out.
We absolutely will. And the Moral Outcry National Petition Movement is still collecting signatures at themoraloutcry.com to end abortion in all 50 states. So we're hoping that our viewers will visit themoraloutcry.com and sign the petition today. And thank you again, Jonathan, for coming, and good night.
Good night,
my
Jonathan.
Joy. So fun.
Thank you so much for joining us on Pro-Life Primetime News, produced at Priest for Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. We won't be with you next Friday, as it's Good Friday, and we will be concentrating on mostly prayerful broadcasts. We will be back on April 5th. We wish you and your families a blessed and happy Easter.
If you like our show, please support us by making a donation to prolifegift.org. These donations help fund all of our work here at Priests for Life, which enables us to continue educating, equipping, and activating God's people to end abortion. For all your pro-life news updates during the week, please follow us on X at Pro-Life News Show. I'm Teresa Watson, Executive Manager.
I'm Leslie Palma, Communications Director. Remember, life is the only choice.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.